Another beautiful day. We're back. Episode 102, Mingle, Mate, and Marry. Our webpage still isn't up, but it's coming soon, so make sure you check it out. And if you haven't followed us on all the other social media platforms, please do. We're even on TikTok.
We are on TikTok, which I am not typically on. I don't go on TikTok and look at things, but we are getting on TikTok.
Yeah.
So.
I don't think I've ever been on TikTok, but our social media guy tells us we're on TikTok because that's what's hip and happening. So,
thanks for being patient. We are getting all these pieces coming together little by little.
Yeah.
We're, I guess, very genuine and authentic because you can tell it's not like super polished and produced.
Right, right. But we're getting there. One thing, if you're watching this, we are starting a Patreon channel in a few weeks and we're going to have different levels, but we'd be interested to know what you'd be willing to pay for in addition to all the other free content we put out.
Yeah.
We think we have some pretty good ideas, but I think our listeners and those who watch maybe come up with some ideas we've never thought of. So I'm not above cleaning your garage for the right amount of money. So
I
just saying.
Don't think I'll take up that offer, but call him.
Yeah. You know, our last podcast, we messed up the author. I was corrected. The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman.
Gary Chapman.
Who told that story in the last episode.
Not Gary Smalley.
Yeah. But he's also an author.
Yes, right. And has done a lot on marriage
okay.
and relationships.
So Gary Smalley is not dead, but Gary Chapman is. Just so for the record, because I said he died. Don't want to start any rumors. With that, we've got a lot to cover today. We want to talk about Tom Brady. We want to talk about what we do well in our relationships. And then finally, we want to follow up with that with something that's very applicable, practical. So I'm a huge football fan. Shree is, if it's the Packers.
I can talk Packers. That's about it.
Yeah. But in the media, especially now that Tom Brady is out of the playoffs as of 2 weeks ago, a lot of thought regarding his marriage again to the supermodel Giselle. And I can't help but imagine, first of all, the amazing amount of pressure that they're both under just within their respective occupations.
Right.
But a lot of people have speculated that the divorce is because Tom Brady wanted to continue on in the NFL. And God bless him, he's still one of the top QBs. But you factor in all these things, and everyone has a strong opinion. And we thought we'd take a few minutes and talk about what are those things in marriage that change in direction that might cause you to stop and second guess your commitment as far as where your marriage is at. So do you have any initial thoughts? Because I do. Okay.
I do. So when you're married, you change, or any person, married or not, you change as a person. You grow, you develop, or you shrink, or you're impacted by different experiences, good and bad. So who I was at 19, my goodness, I am so different than that 19-year-old.
Right.
And I think that we often are surprised when I change or my husband changes as years go by and I kind of have to go, oh, I don't know that I like who he changed into. Or, ooh, I sense he doesn't like who I have become. And that becomes a stumbling block. And it's practical things, too, like Tom and Giselle. Like, I may change and want a different career. I may change and want more of something, less of something that I never expressed before. Or he might change and want to live in a different state. Or and so those changes as we grow and develop or shrink and cower or whatever it is we're doing, those changes can be a surprise, and we're like, what? It feels like bait and switch. Like,
yeah.
I married one thing, and now I have something else.
Right.
So I think the first key is just know change is inevitable and expect it. And so maybe look at it more as an adventure. Like, who is he going to change into being? Who am I going to change into being?
Right.
And the adventure of, okay, I can get to know him in the newness of that, even though we've been together forever.
Yeah. You know, I have so many thoughts on this. One is, know who you're marrying. And so if you marry a professional football player, you have to assume there are going to be a lot of changes just naturally. When my wife and I, early on in our marriage, had some issues, we went to a counselor. And after about two times, I realized this counselor can't help us because, A, she doesn't realize what the life of a pastor is like. And so she was thinking we're both 9-to-5 jobs. And so we realized this counselor is not going to help us. We looked for a while to find a counselor that could because she couldn't relate. So my point is this, in this relationship, and we don't know this couple, but you have to assume that there's always going to be changes.
Yeah.
And when you get advice from someone, whether a counselor or a friend or a family member, they must be able to sympathize with your spouse and the changes they might face in order to give the best advice. With that, one thing that's important to understand is when you get married, you have just as many differences than after you both change. It's just that now you're not used to those differences yet.
Right.
So it's easy to focus on you've changed so much, even if the other person didn't, which granted, they probably did. But the reason why you got together in the first place was because you didn't focus on the differences, you focused on the similarities. The friendships.
That's a good point.
So even though now Tom Brady and Giselle seem like they're going in opposite directions, in a sense they already were, they just at the beginning of their relationship chose to focus on the similarities, which they could still focus on the similarities now and work around the issue of him wanting to continue to play. And with that, again, you have to realize that when they got married, they had to work around issues with her career and his career. So it hasn't really changed any differently. But what happens then is if there are underlying things that they haven't dealt with, then this just exploits it, just brings it to the top.
Yeah, that's a good point. And because I was going to say, I mean, I don't know Tom and Giselle, and it's very possible that the reason they are not wanting to be married to each other anymore is something completely unrelated to football. But that's the whole point. Find out what is, like, on the surface, we just see headlines, and we're using them as an example. But they know individually what it's really about, and I think that's so important that as things change in your life and what you want or don't want and how it impacts your marriage, get busy and do the hard work and go, what is this really about?
Yeah.
In Tom's case, I don't know. Is it really about football and careers? I don't know. It could be something much, much deeper. And so we often struggle with changes, and we talk about the surface issue when really, when you dig down, it's about something much deeper than just what we see on the surface.
Right. Yeah, and probably if you're newly married or thinking about getting married, one of the keys that you'd want to think about is there are things that you might talk about that could change that you really give no power to, or you don't really take it for granted that it could actually happen. And then it happens. So when you're marrying someone, you have to marry them with the understanding there are going to be some huge changes that happen. It could come when you have a child with a disability, or it could come when your husband gets promoted from gas station attendant to CEO or whatever it is. A real life example is probably about 10 years ago, I had a couple come into my office. They'd been married it was more than 15 years. They'd been married for a while. She had always wanted to open a pottery studio, and they lived in the Midwest, but she wanted to move to a different area of the country. And this was always a dream. Pottery studio / coffee, kind of a cool vibe. And the husband always thought, yeah, it'd be great. Never going to happen because we don't have the money. They don't make a lot of money.
Sure.
But she had an aunt who lived on the East Coast and had a house on the ocean. Small little house, not a lot of land, but it was on the ocean. It was in Maine. The husband had explained how they'd gone out there a couple times to see the aunt. This woman, the wife, she was the only living relative in the family now with the aunt. And when the aunt passed away, she had in her will to sell the house and give the money to her niece, now the wife of this husband.
Nice.
Yes. So this not real big house on the ocean in Maine sold for about $3 million.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, this woman, this wife was like, we can do it now. I can, we can take the money. I can open up a pottery studio / coffee shop. We can move to the other coast. And It wasn't the East Coast. It was, you know, obviously either down south or the West Coast. And it threw a huge wrench because when they came in to talk, the husband was like, well, I never thought you were serious. He never thought they were serious because they never had the money. It would be impossible unless something like this happened. Well, the two biggest issues was, isn't it our money? Because we're married.
Yeah.
And she was very quick to say, no, it's not. It's my money because I'm the niece and it was left to me.
Okay.
Right or wrong.
Okay.
But then also she felt betrayed because she'd always heard from him, that's a great idea. If we can ever do that, let's do that. In the back of his mind, we're never going to be able to do that. So there are all these, you know, different things that came into this decision or this issue
right.
that really weren't thought out or talked about.
Right.
And so they ended up getting a divorce. And she went and started her coffee shop and her pottery studio. And he went off to get married. They didn't have kids. I don't know whether that's good or bad. But it was one of those things you didn't see coming. But again, people change.
And life changes. Yeah. Things change.
And finances change. And
bodies change.
Yes.
Health changes.
Everything. So when you walk down that aisle and you say, I do, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, and sickness and in health, there are all these things, there are all these nuances built into that that really just mean change.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Sickness and in health, there's a lot of change that happens for that and everything else. So with Tom and Chazelle, I think probably the football issue was just something that helped push them in that direction. They'd already been leaning that way.
Yeah, change is often not the problem. It's the catalyst to underlying issues. And so we may look at change as the problem, but it actually is just what's nudging you and causing difficulty about bigger issues under the surface quite often.
Right. And like anything, it doesn't have to be a multi-million dollar contract. I can't imagine the pressure that would bring. It could be the smallest of change, but you're just not ready for it.
Right.
And again, to steal a line from Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, choose to respond before it ever happens so that you don't react. And so a great discussion would be choose to respond before it happens so that you don't simply react. Because reactions are bad. If you take a medicine and there's a reaction, that they don't mean it's good. But if they say, hey, the medicine, you're really responding to the medicine, that's good.
Good point.
Yeah. So in some of the counseling I do, I throw out situations where they have to discuss it before it ever happens. And sometimes they laugh because, like, you're going to be left $3.1 million. Like, well, that's never going to happen. Well, this couple never thought that was going to happen. And that was exactly the cause of some of the riff because they hadn't discussed the possibilities. And much like you hear divorce is caused by unmet expectations. But what are expectations that you might not see coming? Talk about them. A change in friends, a change in family.
That's a really good point. A practical takeaway from this is rehearse. Have conversations where you rehearse, well, how do I think? Or how do I think you would react to this change or that change? We recently had friends who suddenly both lost jobs and then they have no money, so they never saw that change coming. Or the opposite, friends that something really good happens, but it impacts, you know, so rehearse what your response is going to be instead of change comes and then you have this huge reaction. That's a good point, Garth.
Right. And some of the homework I give couples that come into my office is you need to spend time with other couples simply so that you can digest and talk and, like you said, rehearse the issues that they're going through. Because what happens sometimes is, especially in today's life and after the pandemic, we all still tend to be a little more stay at home and
sure.
cloistered. But as you start to hang around other couples and you hear issues they go through, don't just get in the car and go, wow, that was uncomfortable. Talk about what you would do in their situation. And
yeah.
you might say,
yeah.
Another one that comes to mind is recently the wife, her mom and dad got a divorce. The husband loved her parents, but now that her parents got a divorce and they both remarried people that they don't really like, it was putting a strain on the marriage because the wife still felt like she needed to spend time with her mom and her new husband and her dad and his new wife. And her husband was like, no, I don't want to. So the point was, is this other couple was telling me about this. And I said, well, what would you do in that situation? And they both said, oh, well, it would never happen. Well, that's the problem. You're not talking about it. Because even if it never happens, it helps you sharpen the skills of how to deal and navigate change. Because something will happen that you have to learn how to discuss and walk through, or it's going to catch you off guard.
Yeah, change really can set off a chain of events. And in, again, remember, there's all kinds of changes. There's normal changes that we anticipate that go with just getting older, or different stages of life and marriage where, you know, you've got the stage of young kids, and then you've got stage of empty nest, and you've got stage of caring for your elders, and then you've got stages of, you know, your own retirement. You've got stages like that that you know are coming. Talk about those. Rehearse. Now, we are not good predictors of saying what we would actually do, but the dialogue, rehearsing, well, what do I think I would do? Just talking about that together. And it's safe. Talk about change before it's upon you, because then it's low stakes to be able to say, well, I think I'd react this way, or I think I'd feel that way. You will learn about yourself and learn about your spouse. So rehearse what change might be like.
So we have a friend, and I won't say who it is, but years ago, he started a business.
Can I guess? No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to guess.
Their name rhymes with, no. And talking to the wife, and again, good friends with him, and this wasn't said in private, but the wife said, when I married my husband, I was excited that he was an entrepreneur and a businessman and wanted to make money and wanted to work hard in order to make money. She said, I knew there were going to be long hours. I knew there were going to be sacrifices, but I believed in his dream. She said, but what I didn't realize or think through was that his dream and his business put him around a lot of very attractive women in an industry where there's a lot of fornication.
That would be so hard for me.
And so she said, and she's never had to doubt him. She's never had any reason not to trust him. But she said that was one of those things, like a change. She had to step back and go, okay, do I really want him building this business and in this industry when I see and know a lot of what goes on? Again, she totally trusted him, but that was something they had to talk through. There were things that he said he'd be willing to change and build safeguards around him because he wanted her to feel, you know, her to feel safe about what he was doing. But again, it was a change, and it was an issue she never saw coming until all of a sudden it was there.
Yeah, to go back to our couple as an illustration, Tom and Giselle, which we know nothing about, but we see the headlines. We hope that they both can come out healthier because of the change. And fortunate for you who are listening and for us, we're not typically in the headlines when we're experiencing change. But just imagine how hard that would be. They are trying to navigate big change, and they've got cameras in their faces all the time.
Right, right. And honestly, don't judge them. Don't belittle them. Don't, you know, act like you know where they're at. If anything,
we don't know.
Yeah, if anything, pray for them, you know, and ask that God would help them navigate and like you said, come out healthier on that side. So with that, there are changes that happen. There are things that take place in a relationship that make it hard to deal with. So we're thinking a great way to kind of dive into this with that topic is topics of what forgiveness is not what forgiveness is.
Yeah, because when things happen and things do change, there's often a need for forgiveness.
Right. And so you've probably never had to ask your spouse for forgiveness.
Never.
And I haven't either. So this is going to be hard for us to discuss, but no, I'm kidding.
Totally kidding.
If our spouses were here, they would add a lot to this, I'm sure. But
that's why we didn't let them come.
Right. Yeah. Too much honesty. So I mean, what forgiveness is not. 6 myths. Number 1, when I forgive, I must also forget.
Nope, it's not possible. And I tell people right away, forgiveness does not mean forgetting. We don't get a lobotomy and have that part of our brain removed that holds that memory. So Don't burden yourself that you have to like forget it and go into denial. No, you're going to remember hurtful things.
Right. Again, using the illustration of being punched in the arm, it happened 4 days ago, but I'm probably going to have a bruise for a week. And even after that, when I'm around the person who punched me in the arm, I'm going to be a little skittish and like, you know, can I trust them? And that's the way forgiveness is. Sometimes that never goes away. You always remember. But I always try to, in that situation, when I feel like I'm reliving it in a sense, to remember that I forgave them and that I asked God to forgive them and that I still seek healing in that and I don't want it to continue to cloud how I feel about them. And trust is built over time, so it doesn't mean, you know, as soon as you forgive, you trust. But like anything traumatic, you're never going to forget it. You just won't. It's impossible.
Right.
You'd have to, like you said, have a part of that brain, part of your brain cut out. Number two, the hurt is too great. And so from this perspective, it's impossible for me to forgive.
So that's a myth. And we would say, as people of faith, there are often things that are so hurtful that on our own, it does seem impossible to forgive. That's where our faith and relationship with God is so important, and because there are hurtful things and it takes really the help of God to forgive. And there are things that will always hurt. You may not ever feel these warm, fuzzy, oh, I forgive you type feelings.
Right.
But it is with God's help. I think it's always possible to forgive. That's why I'm kind of a redemption junkie. I'm addicted to redemption, stories of redemption. And so that helps me forgive because I read about others who have forgiven horrendous things. And think, God, if you helped them, you can help me.
Right. I guess I would add to that this idea of, I'm trying to think of a good illustration. Well, when I go to Scripture, I think of Christ on the cross. And while he's on the cross, we don't hear him say, I forgive you. We hear him say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now, without getting too theological, he, in his humanity, is asking God to forgive them, but also in him also being God, he's forgiving them. And so I see it as a two-step process that there are things that happen to me where I feel like I might never be able to forgive them. So first I go to God. God, you forgive them.
Yes.
And now begin to help me forgive them. Because when I ask God to forgive them, he will. He will. But then that also is it's a cursor in my life that goes, oh, but that also means then you can forgive them through the work of the Holy Spirit in your life. And I love it because everyone can relate to one or two and maybe unfortunately more of those instances where you feel like I'm never going to be able to forgive this person.
Right. Right.
But if you open up your heart, ask God to forgive them, and then in turn, ask him to help you forgive them, you can be amazed at the work he can do.
And just so that you have the appropriate expectations, we totally know, this is not typically instant. Like,
right.
You don't just say these things or make these decisions and then poof, you feel all good about it. You may actively ask for God's help to forgive someone, and you may, your whole life, still carry some of the scar of that. So I just want to acknowledge, this is a process.
Right. You know, a short illustration, too, with that is when you ask God to forgive them and you ask God to help you forgive them, I feel one of the steps then is to go almost in the opposite direction, seemingly, and ask God to bless them. And, you know, and Scripture is very clear to pray blessings on your enemy, to pray for your enemy. And in doing so, it's a restorative process to your heart. And personally, years ago, I had a couple, and the woman specifically said some things about me that were untrue, were very just, salacious, and I lost my job actually at this church. It's one of the things that caused me to move on. And so I began to pray for them blessings. And I'll never forget, I was actually getting some stuff ready in the bathroom to take a shower, and I was mad. I was ruminating over this, and I said, "God, what do you want me to do?" And he said, "Pray for him." I said, "Okay."
Ooh.
So I started to pray like this. Okay, help them see what they did wrong. You know, bring them to a point where they confess their sin. You know, like that. And God said, No. I mean, I'm standing next to the bathtub. I can remember so clearly. And he said, "No, pray blessings over them." And I was like, "Oh, that's going to be hard." And I didn't feel like it, but I just started doing it. I did it for about 3 months daily. God, make them healthier, wealthier, wiser, give them favor, all these things, to a point where I really meant it. So Kim and I sit down at the Big Bowl, at the restaurant, the Big Bowl in the mall. And lo and behold, this couple comes in and they sit. There's a little divider, you know, wall between us. They come and sit down right next to us, right across.
Ouch.
And yeah, I saw them walk in. They didn't see us, so they sat there. And Kim didn't see him because her back was to him. And I said, "Hey, next to us right here is this couple." And she said, "Oh my goodness." And I said, "No, it's all good. It's all good." So we ate. She got up and walked out into the mall to shop. And I just wanted to go over and say hi. So I walked around. I said, "Hey, you guys, great seeing you." And they were kind of shocked. I said, "How's life going?" And talking to them. And as God is my witness, I had joy and laughter, because as I'm standing there looking at them, I remember thinking, all I have for them is love. But the flip side is, you could tell they were shocked, because they saw no malicious intent, no bitterness in me.
You didn't have no attitude.
Yeah, and it was almost like it short-circuited them. Like, why are you not mad at us? Why are you saying hi? Why are you being so genuine? So, again, it's impossible to... It's impossible to doubt God's ability to work forgiveness through you. It's not impossible to forgive. So, all right, we're going to maybe rush through these, or maybe we'll come back next time. But I don't feel like forgiving, so my forgiveness can't be genuine.
Well, we kind of covered that. We may never feel like forgiving. And Dr. Robert Enright has a fantastic book and process of forgiveness, which I recommend highly. Robert Enright has done a lot of research. So if you want specific steps of forgiveness, he's got them, and they're great. Okay, so you're never going to feel like it in some cases, because the wound is so raw and deep and penetrating. But forgiveness is not a feeling. Again, forgiveness is a decision. Sometimes we get the warm feelings and we want to do it, but remember, behavior happens and feelings will follow, but we operate the other way, especially with forgiveness. I'll wait till I feel like forgiving and then I will take action. But actually, it's much more effective, and it's actually more realistic. We act out what it is we're hoping the feelings that will be created. So as an act of obedience, with God's help, I start working on forgiveness. And over time, there is great hope that the feelings of forgiveness will be created. And it's a lot about, it's created through, now I'm praying for blessing on that person that wounded me so deeply. So it's not about, don't wait till you feel it. That won't work.
I'm willing to go over a little on time on this, because I want to unpack this for a second. In many of your counseling cases, I would imagine people come in, and it's easy to look at this as far as forgiveness, but people have a lot of problems that they don't feel like solving, right?
Right.
And so is it the same thing in essence? Like, well, you don't have to feel like it to solve it or to make steps in that direction.
That's right. I try to, when they come in and there's been big hurts and they don't really feel like forgiving, because they maybe legitimately have, it's been so bad and so hurtful, they're like, I can't forgive them. I don't want to forgive them. I don't feel like forgetting.
Right.
I'll never get over this. So I try to remind him, it's two separate things. The action of forgiveness is one thing.
Right.
And then also holding the impact of that hurt is separate and a second thing. So I can begin to start acting and offering forgiveness And I also can acknowledge, but I am still really hurt, and I'm still working through the deep wound that that offense right. caused me.
Okay, so let me, but perfect, good. But say a couple comes in.
Are we going to get into a fight?
No. I really want to get to a different level on this to get your understanding. So say the couple comes in, but the issue is selfishness. He's just selfish. He always wants his way. He always gets his way. He spends money wherever he wants. He does all that. So it's not an issue of forgiveness. I'm sure there's some, you know, but he just simply by feelings, well, I don't want to change.
Right.
I don't want to change.
Right. Ooh, yeah.
I mean, so again, understanding that if you are in that situation, how do you combat that idea of, well, I'm going to go by my feelings and I just don't want to change?
Because forgiveness is one thing, but very often if the other person doesn't want to change,
right.
then there's boundaries. So I can forgive you, and I can also say, and I have a boundary. So I forgive you for being selfish and how it's hurt me, and I'm going to put some boundaries in place in my life to minimize you hurting me again.
Right. See, I knew that. I just wanted her to say it because she's the smart one. No, exactly.
I'm glad I said what he wanted me to.
Well, because in life, you get what you want by honestly learning how to go against feelings.
Right.
You know, and as Jocko, if you're a fan of his, made so popular, embrace the suck, you know.
Yeah.
If it's hard, enjoy doing hard things. Every morning I get up and I take an ice cold shower. And I'll never forget a couple months ago, Joe Rogan showed himself climbing into an ice bath, and he put it in a very crass way. He said, every blanking day I do this. And I remember laughing, going, that's the way I feel every morning. But again, you have to learn to go against your feelings if in no other area, especially in the area of forgiveness, or you'll forever be trapped. And where you don't forgive, you empower the other person and you have no control.
Right.
And if you're like me, I need control. I'm an Enneagram 8. I need to be in control of everything. I don't want to be taken advantage of. I don't want to seem powerless or feel powerless or look powerless. And so part of it for me is selfishly, I'm definitely going to forgive you because I don't want that to control me. And plus, I can't grow in that area if there's unforgiveness and I hang on to it. So,
yeah, because unforgiveness takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of energy to carry all that around in you. And you are actually doing yourself, and you guys have all heard this, forgiving is not so much for the other person as it is, I'm going to forgive because that's going to keep me in a much healthier place, physically, emotionally, spiritually.
Okay, last three, we'll try to power through these.
Okay, we'll power through.
I can't forgive unless the person asks for forgiveness.
See, that's a huge myth. That's just not true. You can. You can forgive. You don't have to be in contact with the other person. You don't have to say it to the other person. The act of forgiveness can happen within your heart, between you and God, towards that other person. And in fact, it's much too long to go into it, but there's a lot of good reasons at times for not involving the other person and doing forgiveness process, just you, your pastor, your counselor, yourself. The other person doesn't have to be involved.
And let me give you another insight. Because of my personality, I have hurt people and I didn't even know about it.
Yeah, so I'd like to tell you.
If you're waiting for them to acknowledge that you need to forget, they may not even know that they hurt you.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm sure I go through life oblivious and people are like, I can't believe he offended me. And maybe it's on them, maybe it's on me. But don't wait for someone to ask for forgiveness. If they hurt you, then walk through those steps to forgive. So the next one is, in order to forgive, I must pretend that nothing happened.
Right. That's like, you know, you have to forget. It's the same thing. You don't have to pretend. I always use this illustration from the Bible. Okay, so Peter denied Christ, and so did Judas. Peter denied Christ, and Jesus and Peter's relationship was restored. And they could talk it out, hug it out, and Peter went on to be a wonderful disciple. Okay, Judas betrayed Jesus and hurt Jesus. And from anything I can see biblically, that relationship or Judas wasn't restored, at least not in this earth. So there's times when I have to forgive somebody. It may mean I still don't continue on in relationship with them.
Mm, good. Wow, that is such a good point, the Judas and Peter. Ew. You know, with that, I would say it's like choosing to deny that you have a stain, thinking of a story of a guy who was holding his baby and didn't realize that the baby had pooped out of its diaper down his nice suit.
Yeah.
And went through most of the day looking at people, and he could smell something, but he didn't know what it was. And then he realized halfway through the afternoon, oh my goodness, my child had, you know,
gross.
On his suit. But he was saying, I can't go throughout the rest of the day and pretend that nothing's wrong with me because I can smell it. And so unless you deal with that forgiveness, people still smell it.
Yeah.
And so just by ignoring it doesn't change the fact that it's going to affect that relationship. It's going to affect you. It's going to affect others. So,
yeah,
don't pretend anything happened, because it's still, everyone still smells it regardless. Last one, I must forgive right away or it doesn't count.
No, I totally disagree.
Okay, why?
I think maybe the goal would be to forgive quickly. That's a good goal. But sometimes people so quick jump to the step of forgiveness that it's actually just a Christian form of denial. If I can say, oh, I forgive you, it's okay, it's all right, I'm actually denying what really happened and how it impacted me, and there are deep down hurt, there's deep down emotions of anger, sadness, frustration, a sense of injustice. I need to process some of those things so that when I identify the feelings that come up for me when you hurt me, I can process that so that when I offer you forgiveness, then it's genuine and it really does have a healing impact on me then. And so I think one of the things you is not hurry up and forgive, it's hurry up and say, God, help me get to a place of genuine forgiveness for this person. Hurry up and go to God for his help in the process.
Right. I look at it, I totally agree. I look at it this way. Time is relative. So do you know how long a million seconds is?
I do not.
It's 11 days.
Oh.
Do you know how long a billion seconds is?
I do not.
32 and a half years.
Oh, wow.
But people don't see that perspective until you break it down like that.
Yeah.
Now, that seems amazing. But if I also ask you, how fast did the last 32 years go?
Pretty fast.
Gone.
Yeah.
So you have three perspectives. You go, a million seconds is probably a couple months. No, it's 11 days. Well, how long is a billion seconds? Well, it's probably a year. No, it's 32 and a half years. Wow, that's long. Well, how fast did the last 32 and a half years go? To me, like that. Yeah. I still think I'm 25.
He's not.
So, no, I'm 26. But the point is when you process forgiveness, for some people, if it takes 32 years, that's a long time. But for some people, man, it just happened overnight. I need to deal with this.
Yeah.
And so the act of forgiveness means this. You might not feel like you need to forgive them until after 32 years of processing it.
Yeah.
And you see how maybe you affected somebody else in that way. And you go, wow, I really need to,
that's a good point.
I really need to forgive that person. Because time is relative when it comes to emotional, mental hurts and baggage. And all you need to do is get married and have kids, and you realize when you're with your kids, wow, I've done some really dumb things that now I see in and through my relationship with my kids. So time's relative. You don't have to do it right away.
Just have willingness. Just say, I'm willing. I may not be able to do it right this minute, but I'm willing to be open to getting to that point where I can really forgive.
Yeah. And again, you might not even see that you need to ask for forgiveness. So in 10 years, when you go, oh, wow, I need to ask for forgiveness, don't play the game of, well, it was 10 years ago. You know, do your homework, ask for forgiveness, and be free from that, even if it came up years later. So, well.
Okay, well, woof.
Ending words?
Ending words. Forgiveness is a beautiful gift, and I encourage you to think about offering forgiveness and accepting forgiveness. That's a whole different topic of accepting someone's forgiveness.
Right. And I always say, love is a choice. We'll see you next episode.